Hi, guys. Welcome to Threads Podcast, Life Unfiltered. Thank you so much for joining us when you're listening to this, which a lot of people listen right when it comes out or at night or when they go for a run or whatever. We appreciate it any time of the day that you're listening and hope you're having a good day. This is episode 135, an interview with Catherine Roberts. But before we get into that interview, we're going to kind of find out what Threads is all about. And Ben's going to do a quick intro and then we'll move on from there.
Thanks, Jason. The Threads Podcast, Life Unfiltered, is all about conversation. Conversation around three main topics. Those are faith, mental health, and uncomfortable conversations. We want to normalize talking about things that are taboo. We want to create a space where it's okay to say, I'm really anxious and I'm struggling with my mental health, and yesterday was a really rough day. We want to make it normal to say things like that. We also want to create a space where it's okay to acknowledge that we may have doubts surrounding our faith or our purpose in life and all of those big things in life that honestly we know less about than we do know about them. So this is a space where it's okay to wrestle with doubt, talk about faith openly and honestly, and be real about our mental health. So that is what the Threads Podcast is all about. And tonight, we have Catherine joining us, and our focus will be, I imagine we'll camp out around the faith concept and a little bit more specifically just about purpose in life, what gives us meaning, that sort of thing. But I'm sure we'll have hints of the mental health and uncomfortable conversations thrown in there as well.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Jason. You're definitely going to have some. I have lots of uncomfortable things to say.
Perfect.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me on. Really looking forward to this conversation.
Our pleasure. Before we get in, we're going to do an icebreaker. And basically what we do is just say, hey, how are you showing up tonight? It's while we're recording this, it's Sunday evening. So we've had the weekend. Some people get the Sunday scaries where it's like, oh, got to go back to work tomorrow. Yeah.
I know. Fortunately, I don't have to get up and go to work. Awesome. So, you know, I'm showing up pretty relaxed and refreshed. Okay. Yeah, I hardly did a thing today. I got up early. I took a nap before noon. But it's been raining here all day. And when it stops raining, the mosquitoes come out. So I've just been in the house pretty much for the day. But it's a lovely day here in the Cove.
Awesome. How about you, Ben? How are you showing up today? We haven't talked much today, so.
I know. What is that? We go for spurts where we talk multiple times a day, and then today rolls around, and I have barely said hi or hair to Jason. So my day has been pretty good. It was a very late night in the Crocker house last night. My daughter Miracle went to summer camp in Branson, Missouri, which is a good 12 plus hours away. And of course, with all the bathroom breaks and everything else, they didn't get home until about 2 o'clock in the morning. So they got to the church at 2. And then once everybody was finally home and settled in, it was around 3. So I had been out rideshare driving, and usually when I come home, everybody's sound asleep, but the house was a flurry of activity at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we crashed and got some sleep, went to church, and Miracle actually decided she wanted to talk about her experience in front of the whole church. So that was an exciting thing to see, kind of very much a proud dad moment. Man, it brought tears to my eyes. She even pointed to our family and said, and I thank God every day for my family who adopted me. And I was just like, oh, so that definitely hit all the feels. And then just kind of kicking back, took care of some, you know, fun budget administrative household stuff. That's always fun. But yeah, excited for tonight.
My question for you, Ben, is did you get a nap today?
I did not. Oh, I intentionally did not take one because if I take a nap, it throws my sleep schedule off and I won't fall asleep until midnight or later. So it almost defeats the purpose of taking a nap.
Okay.
I love a good nap.
I worked on the budget instead.
I love a good nap. And I think like on Sundays, after being in the ministry for so long, like I think that's a law, isn't it? That you have to have a nap on Sundays.
Oh, I think so. That's right up there with, I think that's honoring the Sabbath and keeping it holy.
I used to come home from church and take my clothes off, put my pajamas on and get right in the bed, just like it was the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm coming in pretty good. Had a decent weekend, did some yard work, went for a run, had a good meal tonight. So I'm coming in pretty good. A lot of weather uncertainties this week. We got about five. You're getting the rain that we got, Catherine, but we got about 5 inches in 3 days. So I work outside and we put heavy machinery on lawns. So that might be an issue for me not getting my full work week, but you know, we shall see. I haven't heard anything yet. So I'm planning on going to work tomorrow, but yeah, I'm excited to be here tonight. Catherine and I had a little interview and that was good and enjoyed the time with that. So I'm really interested in this story. So as we kind of jump in, why don't you tell us, you know, a 60-second elevator speech, or if someone said, what do you do right now? Or just a little bit about you, and then we'll kind of get into the interview portion.
Sure. I live in Newfoundland. I am married and retired. I retired early. And I spent 24 years as a born-again preacher, pastor. Ordained minister. And a few years ago, I went through some things that we'll probably get into tonight. And today I'm an atheist and I'm actually writing a book on my journey out of faith. And I'm hoping that it's going to be a guidebook for other people who are questioning their faith.
Awesome.
Very cool. So 20 years is a pretty significant stretch of time, 24 years. I too have a background in ministry. I'm no longer serving in a full-time vocational capacity. However, I still maintain certain levels of volunteer involvement. Right. So how many churches were you involved in during that span of time? Was it just one or several?
I've moved a lot. So, I've been involved in churches in Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, and Saskatchewan. The church that I pastored was in Saskatchewan. But when I first started in the ministry, it was here in Newfoundland. And I started doing like Sunday morning services for the kids. And then that kind of morphed into me doing puppet shows, which I loved doing. Oh my goodness. And so I would write them and my daughter and a couple of her friends would act them out and I loved it. And after that, like from that, I would get invitations to speak and to preach. I got involved in some women's parachurch ministries. And when we moved to Nova Scotia, I got involved in I was on the pastoral team there. It was 24 years. I'm so sorry about that dog. So sorry. The window was shut. So we were talking, I was wondering what the denominational background you two gentlemen are.
Okay, so I have kind of a hodgepodge of backgrounds. Part of my story is what, as I'm doing my own work in therapy, I'm coming to realize there was a lot of spiritual abuse and a lot of very inappropriate things that were done and said to me as a child by church leadership and a lot of pressure that was put on me. And that was in a very charismatic Pentecostal environment where, you know, people can speak for God and nobody really takes the time to like check it against reality or check it against scripture. It's like, I hear the Lord saying that you should go into youth ministry.
Oh, yeah.
Just very unhealthy stuff. So I've been, over the last year especially, kind of unpacking and recovering from that. and realizing just how deep the talons were in my soul. It was pretty, it was bad.
I hear you on that.
That was my early background. And then from there, I went, my family went to a Baptist church. It's like a full circle from one end of the pendulum to the other. And then I went to a Baptist affiliated college, and now kind of found a home in the Wesleyan tradition.
Okay.
So that's the denomination that I'm in now. Okay.
I spent all of my Christian life in, I guess you would call it Pentecostal circles, although I was mostly non-denominational, charismatic, word of faith. I don't know if you're familiar with all of those, those terms. Okay. Yeah. So if I go back to the beginning, if I say I got saved, you understand what I'm saying then for sure. Definitely. So I find it strange to talk about my story now that I don't believe, I look at it in a different, from a different perspective. And so the language has changed, but, so back in 1996 is when I got saved. August the 6th, actually 1996. And I can remember it so well because it was a life changing event. I was really depressed, and there's no way to talk about my journey without mentioning my mental health, because it's very much tied in there. But I was very depressed, lonely. I hadn't seen my husband in 6 months. I had three little babies at home. I don't even think the oldest was in kindergarten. I was suffering with major postpartum depression and suicidal. And I ended up calling a friend who, it was the only Christian friend that I had, I think, at the time, although I did marry into a large Pentecostal family. And anyway, my friend said a lot of things that really struck my heart. You know, she told me that God loves me, and up to that point, I argued with her that there was no such thing as God. I thought it was an imaginary friend, and I was very vocal about that, you know. And I remember saying to her, I don't need a crutch. I need real help, you know. Well, when I hung up the phone, I had this thought, like, well, why don't I try it? Like, rather than kill myself, you know, I mean, it was like my last ditch effort. If this doesn't work, then I can always carry on with my plan. And so it was a very emotional night for me. I was at home and I prayed. And when I finished praying, I just felt a very large shift in my emotions. I felt happy. I started to weep. I cried and cried and cried and cried. And at some point, you know, it felt like a very cathartic moment. And I felt that I had a mystical experience, an experience with God. And then I went to church the following Sunday. I went to her church, which was a Pentecostal. And it was a fairly large church. I think it was probably around 300 people going there, I think, at the time. Okay. And everybody was so nice. Everybody was so nice to me. I had all of a sudden an instant social circle. I had brand new friends. I had support. I had older women in the church who were so supportive of me and helpful. And, you know, especially as a single mom with three little kids. And I got involved in the church immediately, but I was told that I was a baby Christian, so I couldn't understand all of those things. So right at the very beginning, the doubts that I had, I very quickly learned to put them aside. And it took me decades to get back to them, because I got so, I truly, with all of my heart, believed that I had a relationship with Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, God the Father. If somebody said I was religious, I would have argued and said, no, I'm spiritual. I'm not religious. I have a relationship. And it was my entire life. So I didn't, you know, it determined who I hung out with and where I lived. how I raised my children. I didn't let my kids go to school unless I prayed for them before they went to the bus. I got involved in the, school council so that I could make sure that my kids only had Christian stuff. You know, I got quite deep into it. It was my whole life. It was everything I thought of. It was a basis for every foundation. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned in the beginning of your story, just the depression that you were under and missing your husband. And you mentioned being a single mom. So just raises a question for me, if you don't mind sharing. What's the story there with your husband at that time?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. We had been married for, we got married in 89 and this was 96. So, we were married 7 or 8 years. And we were in Alberta, and then I came home to Newfoundland, and he was supposed to come home in a couple of weeks, and those couple of weeks turned into 6 months, and it was a very difficult time for me because we weren't officially, like, we weren't broken up, or at least I didn't think. I didn't think we were.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it was just a really difficult time. We were both very young. I should say that. We were 28 years old. And already married for 7 years with 3 kids. And he stayed in Alberta for 6 months. And unbeknownst to me at the time, he had an affair, just a one-night stand type thing, and which made our marriage kind of difficult when he came back, even though I didn't know about it, but he did. And I think the guilt really affected him, you know. And I was really involved in the church, and he was afraid to tell me. And so fast forward 16 years and I get a text message from somebody that I know. And she said, this woman is looking for you and your husband, looking for you and Sheldon. And he happened to be sitting in the living room with me at the time. And I said to him, like, who is this? I don't remember this woman from Alberta. I don't remember her name. And I should have remembered it. And I made a joke and I said, I hope that's not some baby mama coming out of the woodwork. But listen, I was an ordained pastor then. I was pastoring my own church, and I was starting a new job also the next day. And I remember he looked at me and he said, that's what it is. And I laughed. And he said, no, listen, that's what it is. And I said, this is not funny. Like, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you saying it is not funny? And it took him, like, he had to tell me several times because I was not expecting it. And he said, yeah, I did. I had an affair when I was in Alberta. And now that's probably what's going on. And so he contacted her. And he had a 16-year-old son. So I became a stepmother overnight.
Yeah. And your marriage survived?
Yes.
That?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It was not easy. It was. Can I tell you about the first night after I found out? I made my husband sleep upstairs in a different room. And in all of our time together, we never spent a night in, you know, separate rooms because we were angry at each other. But this was obviously something a little bit bigger.
Right.
We had 2 rooms upstairs. One of them had a double bed. The other one had a little single bed. And I guess he felt so bad that he slept in the single bed. And I got up probably around 2 or 3 in the morning. And put my robe on and walked upstairs and opened the door. And he was lying there on the bed. And I said, I hope you die in your sleep. And I shut the door and I went back downstairs and went back to bed. And, you know, when you're a pastor, it's hard to find a support system. You know, you can't go to your congregation members and say, I'm heartbroken, or, you know, I just told my husband, I hope he dies because, you know, I'm the pastor. I had one good friend, and I might cry if I talk about her though. So, I had one good friend that I met in college, and she, she was the only one who would say, who told me the truth. Like my Christian friends, when I talked to them, they would say, but you're a strong woman of God, and you know, you're a woman of faith, and you'll get out of this, and your husband's a good man. And he is, and he was then. And, you know, people were saying, well, that was 16 years ago. He's a different person. And I'm like, yeah, well, I only just found out last night. Yeah. You know, it's all fresh to me. But my best friend in the world, I remember she said, I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this one. I don't know if Sheldon and I will survive. And she said, I don't know either. She said, this is really, really shitty. I understand it's really shitty. And to have somebody validate that I was allowed to feel anything less than faith-filled and positive was really, you know, really helped. I ended up having to go to the doctor. I went to the emergency room and got on some medication for a while, but not very long. I stopped taking them. That's another thing about the faith that I had, you know, the word of faith and the positive confessions and all that kind of stuff. I, for 20 something years, I wouldn't take my antidepressants that I needed. I was on antidepressants when I was 18 for the first time. And you know, my doctors over the years would say, you should do it. And I'm like, no, I'm not depressed. So the guilt would make me, you know, come off of the medication.
So let's jump into one of the segments that you had sent us, that little blip, which we appreciate. It said, in 2008, your husband and you lost your business, vehicles, and almost everything we owned, and became homeless after you were swindled in a Ponzi scheme by a friend from church. Less than 10 years later, at the age of 48, retired owing 7 mortgage-free properties, which is amazing. What about this friend at church? What happened with that? Were you blindsided by that?
Were we ever blindsided? Us and everybody in the church and everybody in another church in Halifax. He swindled over, well, he got charged for swindling $4 million, but he was friends with my husband. I didn't know him that well, but we belonged to a, you know, fairly small church. I think it was only about 100 people. And it was shortly after we had moved to Nova Scotia and joined the church. So it was one of these Ponzi schemes, you know, you invest so much money, and we were promised, you know, huge returns. And we thought we were being blessed by God. And then the money stopped rolling in, and then the investigators called, and and my husband was on the board of this organization, and that's how good he was. I know a lawyer who was on the organization. There were really good people on this board who thought they were doing really great stuff, you know. But took off to Panama. And in a gated community, he had to be extradited to back to Canada to face charges. And then he dragged his feet in the court for, I think, like a couple of years. So he ended up getting time served. But it was, we like, my husband and I, we were upset over it. I mean, yeah, for sure. It caused the CRA to freeze our bank accounts, and
oh man,
personal and business. At the time, we had a car dealership and an ATV dealership and a garage, and so we were essentially out of business overnight. We had no access to our accounts, and so we just started going behind more and more. We put the house up for sale, and it didn't sell. It took us 18 months, and we got behind that far that the bank came and took the. I think my car was the first thing to go. I had a brand new 6-month-old car. And then the house, we were left with nothing. We ended up in Saskatchewan with just the stuff we could put in our small pickup truck with our dog. And when we finally got a job, which is a house, which was a story in itself, we ended up, we were sleeping on an air mattress, and we borrowed two lawn chairs. We had nothing.
So in light of that, with this happening in a church setting with somebody who may have even joined the church under false pretenses, pretending to be someone that he wasn't, it helps me understand why you came to this place in your life where you chose to walk away from that Christian faith. And we'll get into that.
Because that really does not play into me leaving Christianity at all. Everything that happened after that, I attributed to God. I mean, that I was Christian for almost another 10 years after that. And I believe that it was all a miracle. I mean,
okay. I guess the question that I have from the outset, as I listen to your story and as I hear about where you're at now, I'm always curious with people who have shifted gears away from the church, away from Christianity. What is your impression of the people who decide to stay?
Well, my take on it, of course, is going to be a lot different from other people. I'm definitely an anti-theist and an atheist. So I think that organized religion does more harm and has done more harm than good. But the reason that I feel that way is because I am not convinced that there is a God. So what's happening in the church is that, like, for me, this is how I feel. If the foundation of it is wrong, then the rest of it is going to be at least a struggle, you know? My mental processes, my thought processes now are so much different than when I was a Christian, and my life is so much easier. And I don't mean easier like I'm, you know, going around floating on clouds all the time, but just that.
No, I kind of get it. I do want to challenge you a little bit on, like, you feel like church, you know, you have this amazing story of coming up from the depths and being pulled away from certain death from Christians and Christianity, but yet you feel it's better off without it than having it. And so
I would have been better off. I wish, one of my biggest regrets is going to church that day and not going to see a doctor and getting antidepressants, which is what I needed. Over the years that I was a Christian, I did try them, but for the most part, I would argue that I was not depressed. When I was a Christian, I would have bouts of very serious depression, and yet I was trained to believe or to attribute them into spiritual attacks. So I went, you know, 20 something years not taking a rational look at my mental health.
I have a question, Catherine. Did you take that same approach if you, like, broke your finger?
No. Personally, me, no. But my husband hardly ever went to the doctor. He was raised, I mean, I would go to the doctor if I hurt my arm or whatever, but it was still, going to a doctor was still very much frowned upon. I mean, wow. I know people with arthritis that won't take medication. If you had to go to a doctor, it was a little bit of a lack of faith. I mean, we couldn't even say that we were dying with a cold or my back is killing me or anything like that. You had to always give a positive confession. We believe that our words were containers. So if I said my back was killing me, then I was giving the devil an opportunity to attack my back. I was agreeing with the devil. So I had to always be careful. But that just makes things so much harder to deal with. When I eventually went on my antidepressants about 3 years ago, 8 days, my doctor said, if these are going to work, you'll know in around a week. And on day eight, I woke up like a different person. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had my brain back for the first time in probably decades. It was that much of a difference. I called my doctor and cried and told him how happy I was that he talked me into doing it.
How do you come to terms with acknowledging and admitting that you had this spiritual experience that pulled you out of the depths and essentially saved your life? How do you reconcile that with your current view of faith or lack thereof? Where's the tie in there, I guess?
I've spent the last 3.5 years researching, how the brain works and logical thinking and, looking at things rationally and skeptically, being a skeptical thinker. Our brains do amazing things. And that's what I believe happened to me on August the 6th, 1996, is that, for one thing, just crying releases endorphins and stuff. And I felt better. I felt better. I got up from kneeling on the floor, kneeling by the bed to pray, and I felt better.
I totally get that. And I'm not on team atheist by any means. I'm on team Christian, but I do struggle with a lot of the same things that you struggle with. I don't think that's the reason why you went away. I think it sounds like with the church, just having that pressure, like when you talked about, like, not even saying you have a cold, I'm like, that's a different mentality that I would not be a part of.
Yeah, but I didn't see the flaw in any of that while I was in it. Absolutely none of it.
So I have two follow-up questions with that. What's it like for you to go back and read some of the works that you did during that phase in your life?
I wish I had them. But unfortunately, in my first year, I went through the angry atheist stage, which apparently every ex-Christian turned atheist does. And I couldn't get those things far enough away from me. So I burned all of my notes and stuff. I sold my books and threw away my CDs and that kind of stuff. So I realized that the Bible was not the same to me as it used to. I started seeing things in the Bible that somehow in my indoctrination and my, cognitive dissonance, I missed. The misogyny, somehow I missed. Wilder stories in the Bible, just the story of Adam and Eve. I remember having my husband and I sitting down one night and talking about that and, realizing that none of that made sense to me anymore. I just could not get behind it anymore. And once I realized that the Bible wasn't the way for me to find out who God is or what he's about, I put that aside. I said, well, I don't understand it.
So kind of on that note, my question, the second one that came to mind, is if you experienced the Christian faith in a tradition that was not as toxic as the Pentecostal Word of Faith movement was, say, for example, you grew up or you became a part of a church similar to Brandon Robertson, who is an openly gay pastor who is very committed to the Christian faith. He has a quote that says, as a Christian minister, I believe that queer people and all people are created in the image of God. Do you think that if you were in a vein of Christianity that kind of followed that thinking, do you think the outcome would have been the same as it was in your Pentecostal Word of Faith movement?
I Well, that's a difficult question. I don't know. I'm not an atheist because I chose atheism. For me, atheism just means I'm not convinced of your God claims. You know, like right now I'm speaking to two gentlemen who believe in God, you know, and I've spent the past almost 4 years asking people why they believe in God. Hundreds of people. And nobody has a really good reason. Nobody has a convincing reason. And so as far as like leaving the churches, I didn't leave church. I realized I no longer believed in God. So can I ask you guys a question? I want to know why you guys believe in God. What is your reasoning? Like, what's your number one? How do you know that God is real?
For me, it's a matter of my experience. And there's a lot of warts. Don't get me wrong. Like my belief in God has wavered at significant points in my life, whether it was seasons of loss or just furious anger at people who claim to be of God. But the thing that keeps me anchored and coming back to my faith is the story behind it all and how in some way I feel as though I'm a part of that bigger story. For me, God is the movement of God and the church and my faith is all, it's bigger than just me. And that's what keeps me going. It keeps me connected to the world around me, and it gives me a lens through which I see and understand the world. And my lens may be different than your lens. And that's always been confusing to me. But I think that's just the beauty of life, is we have the opportunity to choose how we see the world around us. And for me, the story of my faith and who I know God to be.
But how do you know? How do you know? Like, at some point you became convinced that a God existed, right?
Yeah.
What was that convincing factor for you?
I would say the complexity of the world around me. And
you don't think that complexity, could happen without a supernatural being behind it?
No, I really don't.
No,
I do.
That's basically where I'm at. I don't have an eloquent answer like Ben, but that's what I always go back to.
But I don't know where we came from either, but I'm okay with saying I don't know. It doesn't have to be a God. I can't, for me, I can't fill in those blanks of, you know, where the universe came from with a God. I just can't. There's no evidence for it. I can say, I don't know. It could have been a God. I don't know. It could be that there's no God. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, there's definitely not really evidence on the other end either, though, you know? Is how, like, I go back to creation, right? Because I just look how complex the human body is as a whole. Being so complex, I will honestly say to you, and you can hear it, you know, and Ben's heard me say this, maybe it's not the God that I worship, but some God, some superpower natural created us. And that's why when someone's an atheist, I often go, okay, well, if you say you can't tell me that there's a God, then tell me how we were created. And they can't give me an answer either. So,
but your answer is just a God that you can't demonstrate. So how is it any less honest to say we don't know where the universe came from?
Fair. I mean, there's books obviously from the Bible that, you know, that explained all of this. You know, again, it's an old book too, so I do question that as well. But I guess I've never had anyone that we've had on the show that talk about Christian or like how things have been made to give me a good case otherwise. They just say it's not that. And I was like, well, that doesn't help me.
Right. And so you don't think that the Big Bang Theory is a fairly good working model for how the universe came into existence with the knowledge that we have at the moment?
No, I don't.
But for me, I think the Big Bang is feasible, but in my mind, everything has to have an origin. Like, what caused the Big Bang? Like, for there to just be a Big Bang, I mean, there had to be a cause or something. At some point, somebody, someone, some mysterious orb, whatever you want to call it, at some point, somebody, something initiated something. Perhaps. And for me, the story that has made the most sense in how I've experienced it and in how I've studied it and come to know it, and I've looked at other options, the one that makes the most sense for me is Christianity. And at the crux of that is Christ. And the one thing that separates all other religions for me is the fact that my faith is not about how I can get to God, like in Islam or in Hindu. You know, you've got these different requirements where you have to do this. You have to pray this direction. You have to recite these prayers. In my faith, the reason that I've stayed so strongly committed to it is I believe that Jesus is the representation. He's everything that the Bible says he is. And instead of me having to find my way to God, I feel as if God has found his way to me through his son, Jesus. And that same opportunity is open to the whole world, to whoever will believe. And I know there's a lot of questions with that, and I can't answer all of those questions. But in my life, that's the story, the narrative, the viewpoint that makes the most sense to me, and where I feel like it's not on me. Like, it's the weight isn't on my shoulders to have those answers. I feel like it's been provided. There was a way out. There was a way forward that was set. And it's like this constant rhythm that has been going on through generations. Just the fact that the faith of Christianity is even still in any sort of existence yet today, I really believe that there's just a rhythm that's been beating in the universe. And it's in some way that I'll never be able to understand or fully explain. I really do believe it's rooted in the truth of Christianity and what I know of my faith. And that's how I see it.
Were you raised in Christianity?
Well, a different flavor, yes.
Yeah. But you were raised to believe that in the biblical Abrahamic God, pretty much.
Yes. Yep.
Most of us are in North America. You know, most of us are taught that right from the very beginning.
For sure. And would I see things differently if I grew up in a different background? Probably. I don't know. That's the beautiful thing about the universe, is it's so diverse. So I don't know if I would have experienced it differently, but this is what I was born into and what I know.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of interviews with Hindus and people of totally other religions. And what I find to be really surprising, or I did at one point, is that they have the exact same reasons for believing in a totally different God. They say that they were raised in it and they have the book and they believe in their God and, you know, their narrative and all of their experiences point them towards their God. And it's like, at some point I got to a place where it's like, okay, everybody can't be right. So somebody has to be, you know, it's either true or it's not true that there is a God, well, right?
Where I struggle with too, where you bring that up about the Hindu, which is such a good point. I say to my wife, I'm like, so if my God, okay, is like the way he is and loving and everything, is he, and that is the correct God, right? Is he just going to smoke out all the other people just because they didn't know Christianity? Like, that seems weird, right? Like, that seems totally unfair that my loving God is just going to be like, yeah, so you never got the opportunity to hear about Christianity. So that's bad on you, and you're going straight to hell. Like yeah. that, I struggle with that. Like that, I go, that can't be the way. So I don't even know if Christianity is the way. This is the way that I'm going. This is the way that I believe, and those kind of things. But I mean, we all could be really wrong. I'm more like you than you think. I'll be honest with you, and I challenge it a lot. But yeah, I totally agree with that. I don't see our God, my loving God, just wiping out people in India because they never heard of Christianity.
Yeah, or sending you to hell for eternity over like for a finite crime of not accepting Jesus. You'll spend all of eternity in hell, you know, if you have a faith that believes in hell, of course. But I mean, I wonder, like, you know, if you have, say, a Hindu woman and a Christian woman who are all things being equal, and they're both equally strong in their faith, and you ask them, and they'll say, you know, the Christian will say, well, I just know Jesus is real. I've always known, and he's moved in my life, and he's done this. And then the Hindu woman says the same thing. And it's like, so how do we determine what's true?
I don't think we can.
Exactly. I don't think we can either, which is why I'm an atheist.
Right. And that, you know what? I have no judgment with that. I get it. Like, you choosing a non-lane is just as much as us choosing Elaine.
Yeah.
I mean, to be although honest,
I didn't choose,
you.
I don't believe that we choose our, I don't think we choose our beliefs. You guys haven't chosen to believe in God, and I haven't chosen to be an atheist. Belief is just a matter of conviction. You've either been convinced of it or you're not, right? You can't really choose, like, you can't right now choose to not believe in a God, right? It would take some convincing. You would need the evidence.
It would take convincing. For me, I think there have been points in my life where I, you know, one of them was coming off of a terrible experience in which I was lied to by my senior pastor that was over me, and I had lost the job because he wanted things to be his way, and it was just a very toxic, unhealthy church situation. So many people left the church over that, because regardless of whether they were on Pastor Ben's team or other pastors' team, it brought division. And I just looked at that and was like, people's lives and livelihoods and beliefs, everything's being shaken up by this. Is this really something I want to stick with? And that's just one of the times. So do I choose my beliefs? I think I do. I weigh them in light of my experience and somehow choose to continue with them.
I agree with you. I agree with you to a point. You choose things, but you choose things based on what you're convinced of. I can't convince myself right now. I cannot choose to believe in Jesus. I can choose to go back to church. I can choose to go back and get right involved in church again, but I can't choose to believe in God. I need some, you know, I need something that's going to convince me. And so far, nobody has been able to convince me, because skeptically and rationally, it doesn't make sense to me.
Do you feel like, though, there's a lot of things in life that you're never going to, you talk about the convincing. So I think it's kind of like a word war with, like, convincing and choosing. You know what I mean? Like, I get what you're saying. You can choose to go back to church, but you can't choose to believe in Jesus, which I don't know. I don't quite understand that. But what else, can you give an example in life that you think that you struggle with because you can't believe, because no one can convince you? Or how am I trying to
phrase that? It's only the God belief that people use faith to get to. We don't use faith. I know you guys are going to argue with me on this point. We don't, which is fine.
Well, anything financial, we put a ton of faith in. I mean, we have no guarantee that the market's going to.
But we have experience, and we have history, and we have confidence from what we know from the past of how finances work. You know, so that's different from faith.
Tell that to 2008. I mean, 2008, the wheels fell off. Nobody saw that coming.
We are able to look at financial trends, right? Like I've had people say, well, you have faith in that, in this chair that it's going to hold you up when you sit down. That's not faith. That's confidence. I've sat in a lot of freaking chairs in my life, right? We've all sat in a lot of chairs, and for the most part, they hold us up. So I have a lot of experience with chairs. I don't need faith. It doesn't require faith for me to drive my car. I see faith actually as a useless word, for not knowing how, not being able to explain why you believe in something. It's just faith.
Well, what if faith is for those anomalies that we can't explain, like the market that crashes or the chair that falls from underneath you, or, I mean,
How can it not be? Why can't it just be a coincidence though? Like, you know, we know by experience that every now and then a chair is going to break. There's lots of factors that go into it, right? We know chairs are going to break. I sat on a chair on holidays once down in St. Croix and the frigging thing broke and I was so embarrassed. But you know, I didn't have faith that that chair was going to hold me up. I had confidence that it was going to hold me up. That confidence wasn't, you know, but the thing is that there are such thing as coincidence, and there's such thing as, even if a coincidence is extremely rare, the fact that it's very rare means that it does still happen. So, you know, like I mentioned, people, I pray for people who said they've gotten healed. Well, some people get healed anyway. You know, there are coincidences, there are natural occurrences, there's cause and effect, you know, but faith for the most part doesn't even really have much of a definition when you think about it, unless you mean like your religious beliefs that, you know, some people use faith, you know, like my adherence to my faith, right? But for me, for all of those years, I took a lot of things on by faith, which meant that I didn't have to examine them. And then when I examined them, they fell apart like a house of cards.
For me, faith is looking at those things and examining them and yet choosing to proceed, often with caution, often with reservation. But for me, the faith is bigger than me. It's bigger. It's not just a card I play when I feel like I don't have a better answer, so I'm just going to play the faith card, or I'm just going to lean on this as a crutch. Like, for me, faith is the substance of belief, and it's the substance of experience, and all of that kind of collectively mushed together.
What does that mean, though, Ben? What? Tell me what that means to you, that faith, because I know Hebrews 12. Tell me what that means to you. Faith is a substance. Like, faith isn't really a substance. It's we say that a lot because it's in the Bible, but like, you know, my tissue here is a substance, but faith isn't. Is it really?
I think it can be. What are your emotions? Your emotions are something that we put a lot of words around, in mental health and depression.
Sure.
That's substance. Yeah.
Emotions are real. Emotions are just a natural human, you know, experience. That is what makes us human. We're alive. We have emotions.
I think we're kind of getting down a rabbit hole with this, honestly. So I'm going to kind of pull us out a little bit. Going back to the faith thing, I wonder if you struggle like I do, and it kind of has to do with like the coincidental thing, but you know, you see all this stuff in the Bible, right? And Ben and I have talked about this on the show. It's like, why do I not see that stuff happen in 2021? And why did the Bible stop? Like, why is there no new literature about that? And Ben probably challenged me on that. But so I get where you're coming from with the coincidence. I think we can talk all night on that. But I just wonder, like, again, I'm on your side. Like, a lot of this stuff, I'm on your side. And I think that bugs Ben too, because, you know, not bugs him, but I mean, I feel the same way. I said, you want something tangible, and I'm a big tangible guy too. And that's why I really believe in science, but
not really tangible.
Well, evidence.
I want something. If it's unfalsifiable, I can't believe it. And the concept of God is unfalsifiable, which means you can't prove there is one, and we can't prove there isn't one. So when faced with that decision, where do we go? If it can't be demonstrated, then how do we go about believing it?
Well, that's the same thing as tangible. It can't be, you say you can't really reproduce it or.
Yeah. Yeah.
I often think I was curious about you brought your chair analogy in. What about driving? Do you have faith that driver is not going to drive his car into your lane? No. You know what I mean?
No, that's not faith. That's confidence because we're on the road all the time. You want to know what faith is? Faith is, you go put a blindfold on, go to the busiest intersection in your city, ask Jesus to protect you for while you walk across the busiest intersection. If that would be more closer to faith than, trusting people who are driving who also don't want to die in a car accident,
Well, that wouldn't be faith because that would be just exactly what you experienced in the church. I mean, that would just be stupid. You'd be just putting yourself at risk. I mean, God still asks us to be responsible for our own bodies.
Oh yeah. I agree. It would be totally stupid to do it. But what I'm saying is that it's, driving down the street, I don't have faith that the person coming at me, isn't going to run me off of the road. I have confidence that people know how to drive. They have a driver's license. They don't want to die. They don't have a death wish. Can it happen?
Yeah,
sure it can. But my experience so far in my 53 years is that people will not veer off into the other lane. So that's completely different than faith in my view.
I'm glad we got into the weeds a little bit at the end. I don't think we're going to convince each other otherwise. And that wasn't our goal by any
Absolutely
means.
Not. No.
And this is why I love this platform because, we can have a little bit of a heated discussion. I mean, clearly we're not going to see eye to eye and that's not what we set this up for. But, as we close, I'd love for you to just give us a closing thought, what you think about whatever, about tonight, like how you felt about tonight, where, what you're doing in the future, just a minute or two to, if you need to plug anything, we really didn't talk about that. If you're doing anything that you're looking to plug or you're just looking to sit down and tell your story or those kind of things, why don't you just take a couple of minutes to do that? And then I'll end it.
Sure. I don't really have anything to plug. I am working on a memoir, but at the rate that I'm going, it might be an end of life thing. I don't know. I was really just excited to come here and share my views and hear your views. And I kind of like, just to chat about things. And I enjoy being challenged and I enjoy challenging other people. It doesn't offend me at all. I think that everybody needs to find their own way in this life. I also think that truth is very important, especially in this day and age, because the world, our what we believe, our worldview is what shapes society. And for me, I want my worldview to hold as much true things as possible and as few false things as possible. So, my biggest advice to anybody is just to examine what you believe and what are the grounds for that,
Yeah.
That's my biggest takeaway is just rational, skeptical thinking, I guess.
No, I love that term, skeptical thinking. Not so much challenging, but just like, don't take what someone says by face value. Just think about it, dig into it, ponder it a little bit. Maybe it's that, but let's dig around that a little bit. So Catherine, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for challenging Ben and I. It was good to hear that. It was good to get that a little bit.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast, and you guys are really great to chat with, I must say.
Well, thanks, guys, for listening to Threads Podcast, and I will hit stop recording.